Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley reporting from Washington, D.C. Now, we want to pay attention to protest actions, mass mobilizations, and the political struggle against the Obama regime, but also against their reactionary Republican opponents. The fight is always going to be on two fronts. On the one side, against the Obama fascist corporate state, and on the other side, against those ultra-reactionary Republicans who have their own method of looting and pillaging and ultimately killing. And therefore, we survey the panorama of mass protest now emerging. Right? There is an upsurge of mass activity. On the one side, we've had the Tea Party protest here in Washington on September 12th, almost a week ago as we record this program. And at the same time, we're going to have a protest in Pittsburgh for the Group of 20 this coming week. And we've also got some rather feeble anti-war protests on the agenda. Now, the idea has emerged out of all of this, which we'll describe some of these things in detail as we can. The idea has emerged. Why march on government when government is not the principal enemy? Government is simply a tool of financial interests, of finance oligarchs, of Wall Street, of finance capital, of the world derivatives merchants cabal, of the bubble economy, globalization, the casino economy, and so forth, right? The hedge fund hyenas, the asset strippers, the derivatives merchants. This is truly the center of evil in our time. The principal objection to the federal government is that it's controlled by Wall Street. Therefore, from a number of quarters in the past week has emerged the idea, why march on government when you could go to the heart of the beast in Wall Street? Why not have a march on Goldman Sachs? The evidence against Goldman Sachs is, of course, overwhelming. Going back many decades, there is this useful article by Matt Taibbi in Rolling Stone from, I believe, their July issue. You can look at things like the crash of 1929. They play a role. They didn't create it, but they were involved with their investment trusts or mutual funds, the Shenandoah Fund and the Blue Ridge Fund and so forth. You can read about this in Galbraith. They are very much involved in the dot-com bubble of the early aughties. They're very much involved in bidding up the price of oil, as we've been saying from week to week here. Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and their ICE exchange added about, just those two firms added about $1 for every gallon of gasoline you were buying in the summer of 2008. And then, of course, the derivatives and the bailout and the role of Hank Paulson, Hanky Panky Paulson, former Goldman Sachs executive, and all the rest of them with their Goldman Sachs connections. Why not have a march on Goldman Sachs in the Wall Street area of Lower Manhattan? And I'm talking a march that would not be simply a protest, simply a hue and cry against the monstrous excesses of Goldman Sachs, but it could be linked and could be organized around, indeed, the idea of a Tobin tax. In other words, making Wall Street pay, not just protesting them, not just agitating a protest movement, but making them pay the cost of the depression which they themselves have inflicted on the world. If you're upset about bonuses, you should be. If you're upset about the bailout, the so-called TARP, you should be upset to the point of wanting to claw back that money. Get the Wall Street parasites to pay through the nose. And there's a programmatic way to do it. The Tobin tax, a 1% tax on all financial turnover. That means derivatives, including the market-traded derivatives, the options, futures, and all the combinations thereof. Options, futures, and indices, all derivatives, and all the combinations of those. There are also then the over-the-counter derivatives, you know the catalog, the credit default swaps, the structured investment vehicles, the collateralized debt obligations, the mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, and on, plus stocks, bonds, U.S. Treasury securities, why not, commodities, oil, a good way to cut down speculation, put a 1% tax on those oil future index contracts, forward market in oil, spot market in oil, and the question then of foreign exchange, which is trillions and trillions per day. All financial transactions, 1% Tobin tax, a sales tax on Wall Street. You pay between 5 and 10 to 11% sales tax depending on the state you live in. You may even be paying that on your grocery bill, which makes this an extremely onerous, regressive tax. Goldman Sachs is practicing flash trading, super speed trading, faster than the speed of light, according to some versions. They're practicing program trading. They're practicing high frequency trading. That's all wonderful. Oh, we're so impressed by the innovative financial products coming out of Goldman Sachs. But the bottom line is 1% on every trade goes to the Federal Treasury, half of it, one half of 1% to the Federal Treasury, and one half of 1% to the various states. I call, therefore, on leaders who may be going to Pittsburgh this coming week, the anti-globalization people. If you are serious, if you have any programmatic content at all, beyond impotent protest and a chance to smash a few windows in honor of the G20, the IMF, and the World Bank, why not take concrete measures, practical steps to diminish the overweening, hypertrophied, and preponderant power of finance capital in this society? Strike a blow against the casino economy, against the globalized derivative merchants, against the various Paulsons and Bernankes and Geithners and Summerses and the rest of them who have created this monstrous world economic breakdown crisis. A march on Goldman Sachs, nonviolent and not involving civil disobedience, at least from my point of view, purely political, designed to inflict a 1% Tobin tax on these characters. Now, as we reported last week, the movement 1 year after the fall of Lehman Brothers, 1 year after the beginning of the more acute phase, or this preliminary phase, really, of the collapse of the Anglo-American banking system and indeed of the U.S. dollar, this is now gathering interest. The AFL-CIO, as we reported last week, is demanding a tax of $1 million, that would be a Tobin tax, on primarily stock transactions. That is, of course, too little and too narrow. Not $1 million, but 10 mils, 1%. 1 cent on the dollar, 1% of the entire transaction, and not just stocks. That would already yield several hundred billion dollars over the course of a year. But the big category, the big potato here is derivatives, exchange-traded derivatives and over-the-counter or designer derivatives, which in many cases we can't even estimate because they are not reportable thanks to the defeat of the valiant Brooks Lee Bourne of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission back in the Clinton administration. She was defeated by Bullet Bob Rubin of Goldman Sachs and Citibank, as well as by Greenspan, the Ayn Rand freak, who helped to bring you this depression. We were told at that time, oh no, making derivatives reportable is communism. So march on Wall Street, march on Goldman Sachs, and get a 1% Tobin tax. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Back to World Crisis Radio. We're discussing the idea which has emerged now from a number of quarters of a march on Wall Street featuring protest against Goldman Sachs, but a protest with teeth, a protest with program and content and substance, the 1% Tobin tax on the speculative turnover, the flows of hot money by these globalized finance oligarchs who are the principal marplots in civilization at the present time. And, of course, the AFL-CIO has launched a campaign for a small and narrowly defined Tobin tax, but a Tobin tax nevertheless. That would be a 1 mil tax on stock turnovers. Make it broader. Make it derivatives, stocks, bonds, commodities, foreign exchange, everything basically that goes across these exchanges. It's a sales tax. Everybody pays it. 1%. We pay between 5 and 10. Dear bankers, you talk of shared sacrifice. So sacrifice already. Sacrifice 1% of your flash trading and your high-frequency trading and your other program trading strategies. The AFL-CIO is one version, and they are now joined by Robert Kuttner. Robert Kuttner is a fixture in the left liberal world. This is the American prospect. He has access to The Nation and groups like this. You can see him together with the various Boros ages and Katrina Vandenhoevels of the world. But he's now proposing a more robust version. It looks like he's interested in making it somewhat bigger. I'm not sure he says exactly how much it should be, a very small tax, and that this could be on it would be a universal financial transaction tax. Now, he estimates hundreds of billions of dollars per year. And I think that's certainly true, but it's a lowball estimate. If we estimate total U.S. financial turnover, including derivatives, as somewhere between $1 quadrillion and $2 quadrillion per year, and I tend towards $2 quadrillion perhaps up, then if it's a 1% Tobin tax, that's going to get you, $20 trillion of income. On $2 quadrillion, you get $20 trillion. $10 trillion for the feds, $10 trillion for the states. Now, that wouldn't last forever. That would tend to diminish as the life went out of the booze for the speculators, as speculation became less attractive, but it would continue to bring in substantial amounts. Kuttner talks about it from the point of view of a tax that could do a great deal for the hard-pressed deficits of the federal and state governments, and also it would provide what is totally absent today, progressive populism, he says. Yes, indeed, progressive populism, some way to strike back against the monstrous excesses, crimes, arrogance, and looting by Wall Street. The Democratic administration today shovels trillions, $24 trillion, Kuttner, trillions to Wall Street under the leadership of Geithner, Summers, and Barkey Obama, the Wall Street puppet. So therefore, the Tobin tax. And he quotes, of course, Adair Turner, the head of the British Financial Services Authority, interested in the idea, and in the German election campaign, which is now heading towards its culmination next Sunday, Sunday the 27th, Germany votes. Looks like Merkel will win, but the finance minister, Peer Steinbrück, this is the finance minister of Germany, SPD, called for a Tobin tax. The French government has called for a Tobin tax. Watch out. They're talking about a Tobin tax on financial transactions that would flow into some IMF, International Monetary Fund, or World Bank coffer that would be used to bail out bankrupt investments in the third world, the London Club, Paris Club debt towards sub-Saharan Africa. Forget about that. Those countries get a debt moratorium. That stuff is canceled, written off, no pay. We need the Tobin tax here as a means of national policy, of national strength, of building up the power of the United States and other countries to fight the world economic depression. And the only way you fight depression is to cut the power of the finance oligarchs down to size. Where are you going to start? Here's a good place to start. And I appeal to all libertarians, right-wingers, if you don't want to be flayed alive by Wall Street, here's your chance. If you're a Tea Party protester, this is the ticket for you. And you don't like it because it's a tax? Well, get real. There are going to be taxes. The only question with taxation is who's going to pay? Which social groups? Get some class consciousness. Get wise. Don't be a sucker. Don't be a easy mark for Wall Street. And there's these bankers, they're talking about shared sacrifice. We've also got then this, even the tactic has emerged from a number of conference calls, but the tactic has also been endorsed on the air by this guy, Norman Goldman. He calls himself Norman Goldman. You might have heard him. He came on this week to replace Ed Schultz, unfortunately, the principal left-wing talk radio honcho, right now operating from Rockefeller Plaza. So an Obama acolyte, Ed Schultz, has got Norman Goldman in as his replacement. And Norman Goldman, polemicizing with the Tea Party protesters, said to them, why go to Washington? Why don't you march on Wall Street? So I say to Norman Goldman, great, Norman, why don't you put your money where your mouth is and support a march on Goldman Sachs? But again, not just that we don't like Goldman Sachs and Goldman Sachs is bad. This is widely known. What are you going to do about it? What's the program? What's the agitational thrust? 1% Tobin tax on all the trades that Goldman Sachs makes, and not just them, but Citibank and J.P. Morgan Chase. These are the people who stole $700 billion from you in the bailout. And I'm talking bailout, not stimulus. Stimulus is a mixed bag. Half of it probably okay, or maybe one-third or 40%. But when it gets to the bailout is totally wrong, totally to be rejected. It's in the same category with cap and trade, cap and tax. But in this case, the bailout, we're now getting the first anniversary of the bailout, which emerged from that awful conspiratorial meeting in Geithner's office with Paulson, with Pandit the Bandit of Citibank, with Diamond of Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase, with Ken Lewis of Bank of America, with Thane of Merrill Lynch, with Mack of Morgan Stanley, with others, Bank of New York Mellon, largest custodial trust bank in the world with almost $30 trillion under management. They were there, too. That's one of the hearts of the establishment. Wells Fargo also involved. That was a conspiratorial meeting, and out of that came the idea that the taxpayer should pay for the derivatives bubble. And, of course, it does not work. The derivatives bubble cannot be maintained. So there is a thrust. The Tea Party people would be well advised to take this under consideration. I doubt they will because they've fallen under the control of desperate Republican demagogues. We'll be back in a minute.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
World Crisis Radio. So we're talking a march on Goldman Sachs to impose a 1% Tobin tax to make the Wall Street hyenas pay, and indeed pay the cost of the depression which they've created. If there's a worry about how to finance healthcare reform, the Tobin tax is one obvious part of the mix. Again, I can't promise that it would be $20 trillion every year. But in the first year, it would probably be something in that neighborhood, perhaps more. The big thing is apply it to all derivatives, exchange-traded and over-the-counter, right, the structured notes, designer notes, whatever they have, and you will begin to turn the entire thing around. The other aspect of this is since Wall Street speculation is the only thing that is not taxed in a world in which everything else is overtaxed, this amounts to favored treatment. It's an encouragement. It's basically a subsidy for what you don't want. You're subsidizing speculation, which is destructive to society. Why not turn that around? You should tax what you don't want and subsidize what you do want. And what you do want would be healthcare. But of course, healthcare depends on production. You'd have to build 1,000 hospitals and train 250,000 doctors if you want to have health care over the next decade. There are some anti-war protests here. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, they're going with October 2009, a month of anti-war protests as a result of the 8th anniversary of the lunatic invasion of Afghanistan by Mad Dog Bush in the wake of 9/11. And they're going with October 17th as a day of mass rallies, marches, coordinated local and regional demonstrations. Now, this may be isolated, but at least it has the elementary sanity of picking a Saturday, Saturday, October 17th, a day when people might be able to come to it, rather than some of these other demos, which are put on days like the 5th and 6th of October, which are Monday and Tuesday, when you can be damn sure that nobody will be able to come. So look at these Tea Party people. They had the good sense to put it on a Saturday. They wanted somebody to show up. So WILPF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, that's at least minimum requirements of sanity going on. And otherwise, Tuesday, October 7th, if that's correct. Sorry, they've got it wrong. It's Tuesday, October 6th. So you get the idea. Look on the Internet and figure out what's the one that you can go to. And this, of course, is specifically anti-Obama. Now, the teabag protests, the Tea Party protests, here in Washington, my estimate is 75,000. The way you can do the estimate is you look at this area in front of the Capitol. You're talking the west front of the Capitol, where the inaugurations, among other things, take place. We had a 9/11 action there as part of a peace demonstration about 2 years ago. 75,000 basically fills the area up to the Grant statue and that pool of water, which is to the west of the Grant statue, west being towards the Washington Monument, towards the Lincoln Memorial, and towards Arlington, Virginia, that you can see. The Grant statue, very large, probably the largest equestrian statue of anybody in the world, is there. And it looks to me like the Tea Party people got themselves out to the Grant statue and slightly beyond it. But more than 75,000, I would not say. Certainly not what Michel Malkin puts out, this reactionary harpy, and not what the mentally unstable Glenn Beck says about this. Right, this was not 2 million. I'm sorry, I wish it were, but it was not. Fine, 75,000 is a very good result. That's quite significant. And essentially, hats off to the people who went to break the spell against Obama. But of course, don't kid yourself that you're 10 feet tall when you're not. Look at who ran it, though. This was pure corporate Republican lobbyists, public relations firms, and others. If you look at the list of the speakers, and I think I watched almost all of them, there were no Democrats. You'd think they would have gotten Puma Democrats in there, anti-Obama Democrats who might have been pro-Hillary, but certainly anti-Obama. They could have had somebody from No Quarter USA, right, the Larry Johnson website. They could have had any number of Puma websites. No Democrats, no Pumas. There was not even any Ron Paul, right? You think they'd invite Ron Paul or somebody from that neck of the woods? No, they did talk about auditing the Fed at one point, but nothing about Ron Paul. There were no official libertarians, no official Constitution Party, any of the other groups that might have been there. No. This was pure corporate GOP. The Grover Norquist gang, the anti-tax extremists, were there in significant force. Not Grover Norquist himself, too well known maybe, but others. And largely it's this Freedom Works Foundation. So it's a foundation. Freedom Works Foundation, their foundation funded. This is a right-wing foundation, and this is Dick Armey. Remember him, the lieutenant to Newt Gingrich, 14 years ago when the Republican House extremists, the right-wing radicals, they're not conservatives, they're right-wing radicals and right-wing extremists. When they took over the House of Representatives, remember Newt Gingrich, who today says he's concerned about old people, wanted Medicare to wither on the vine, and he still does. Dick Armey, who thinks that unemployment insurance is communism, that a minimum wage is communism, food stamps are communism, Social Security is communism, Medicare and Medicaid, all communism, WIC, I'm sure, is communism. So Dick Armey, the number one speaker, dement of South Dakota, I would call him dement, as in demented. Senator Demented of South Dakota was there. And Congressman Pence of Indiana. Congressman Pence, you didn't say anything about 100 nuclear reactors. The way to save the Republican Party, if you want to have one, is to make it the party of heavy industry, modern, high technology, high capital intensity, high energy density, high wage modern industry. That would be a reasonable platform, but it's not. That's not what they're going with. They're going with, we are the party of southern sweatshops, low-wage employers, low-wage small business, which, of course, these are groups that deserve help, but you cannot remake the society as a whole according to the needs of small business, because you don't get out of the Depression without heavy industry, capital goods production, something that the Republicans once stood for when they were the party of protectionism from Lincoln, indeed, to Hoover. Protectionism was the great saving grace of the Republicans, whatever else they did. The highest protective tariffs ever under Republican presidents, and all to the good, but not anymore. Now it's free trade and sweatshops and the rest of this. So that's basically a blind alley in terms of the future of the United States. The Tobin tax turns the tables and gives it something positive, because remember, the rule of thumb is if you're not fighting bankers, you're wasting your time and you're spinning your wheels. Now, let's shift gears and look at Afghanistan. Terrible news coming in from Afghanistan. A big bomb in one of the Afghan cities has killed six of the Italian NATO forces. And I think that is going to start a very important dynamic on the Italian contingent, which is several thousand, that I think they're going to be out sooner rather than later. Remember, we've been looking at the British as candidates to leave, especially if Gordon Brown falls, as he's going to fall in the near future. And also the Canadians are candidates to leave for sure. Now they're joined by the Italians, and the message is all NATO, get out of Afghanistan. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Let me call your attention to my recent books, three of them that you've got to read. You really can't understand anything if you don't know what's in these books. Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Greatest Financial Crisis in Human History. You can find a way to buy that from tarpley.net, tarpley.net, tarpley.net. Click on the cover of Surviving the Cataclysm, and you will be on the fast track to buying it. Same thing goes for Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Get it through tarpley.net. And similarly, Obama, The Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. Get it through tarpley.net. We'll be referring to some of these books as they pop up, because they basically foreshadow much of what is going around us, going on around us today. The rundown, therefore, on these peace demonstrations, and make them as anti-Obama as you can. There are some demonstrations on Monday, October 5th. Again, what's the point of Monday? But since they're there, if you're off on Monday, go to those. Tuesday, October 7th, the 8th anniversary of the invasion of Afghanistan in the wake of the 9/11 stunt by the U.S. intelligence community. That's another one. So if you're off on Tuesday, October 7th, go to those. And then Saturday, October 17th, other anti-war actions. And unfortunately, there is no common front among even the groups that you think might be involved, the various answer coalitions, peace and justice and so forth. They're all in disarray, mainly because the foundations upon which some of these have depended don't want attacks on Obama. But there will be now a growing anti-war movement. The Italians, as I've said, in the wake of the killing of the six Italian soldiers in the past week, there's now a split. You can see it in the Italian government. The president of Italy, Napolitano, ex-communist, is totally on the stay the course line. And the defense minister, La Russa, also says time to renew our commitment to Afghanistan. Berlusconi shows himself again to be a possible statesman, certainly, in this situation. Berlusconi, in many ways, the most positive head of government in Europe. That's why he's under attack. Figure it out. Learn something. Why is Berlusconi under attack? Because he sometimes does something halfway decent. Berlusconi says he wants a transition strategy to get out. He has already said the Italian forces had been augmented for the time of the Afghan election. So Berlusconi has now ordered the extra Italian forces back out of Afghanistan, and he says, I want a transition strategy. So you can see this pretty clearly. Berlusconi would like to terminate this. And again, forces in Britain also have seen the handwriting on the wall. And the Canadians, I think this is just a matter of time. Now, here in the United States, and this is big news, it's going the other way. There is a secret report. It's not being kept completely secret because it can't be. It's being leaked because it's very controversial. So leaks continue in Washington, even in the utopian golden age of Barkey. The secret report by General McChrystal, and you'll remember he is the certified war criminal, the guy who set up the torture chambers in Iraq. He's also probably the founder of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which he conjured up out of a hat when it was needed for propaganda reasons under Mad Dog Bush the Younger. This General McChrystal, this is now Obama's hand-picked commander in the Afghan theater, is demanding 40,000, that is 40,000 additional U.S. forces on the fast track. There is an attempt by the Obama regime and the controlled media, and this is now a broad array, including left-wing media, will not mention this. It's 40,000. Fox News, put it on. Great. That's why you need a free press. Evil people do good. Fox News reporting, antiwar.com repeating, McChrystal wants 40,000 additional U.S. forces. That would mean that since Obama taking office, the U.S. forces in Afghanistan would have increased 300%. Now, there's a surge. That goes way beyond any surge carried out by Mad Dog Bush the Younger in Iraq. That's the troop level that Obama is demanding. And this is not just talk. 3,000 additional GIs are on their way to Afghanistan right now. So that's almost one-tenth. But this is now 40,000 above and beyond. So this is a massive escalation. The Washington Post is now back to publishing the faces of the dead, the catalog with photographs of the people who have gotten killed in Afghanistan. This is an absolute disaster. The U.S. animus against Karzai couldn't be greater. Karzai has now declared himself the winner of the Afghan elections with more than 50%. He does not need a runoff. He does not need ballotage. So the U.S., the State Department is obviously grumbling right there. There's tremendous hostility to Karzai. This is being played out inside the country. Clashes with Holbrooke and between Holbrooke and Karzai, as we've heard. So this is obviously a very explosive situation. Karzai, don't become the next President Diem. Don't end up in the trunk of a car run by the U.S. Embassy and the State Department. This is an absolute recipe for catastrophe. Petraeus is going to testify. We've actually had testimony in front of the Congress by Admiral Mullen, the warmonger holdover head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who says, yes, the situation is deteriorating and serious, but we must have more forces, more commitment, more time, more money, more civilians, more everything. What is the point of this? What is the goal? Nobody can tell you what the goal is. There will be testimony by Petraeus in the near future. There's a demand from certain anti-war Democrats who are now coming out of the woodwork after a long, long eclipse that McChrystal himself, the butcher McChrystal, should come before the Congress and testify along with Petraeus. But Defense Secretary Gates, the former office boy of Zbigniew Brzezinski back 30 years ago under Carter, Gates is saying no. McChrystal does not have to come. He's busy fighting the war and so forth. Biden has been cavorting around Iraq, getting shot at, right? Mortar rounds falling all around him. And Biden's line is, if the Maliki regime in Iraq wants the U.S. to leave, then the U.S. will leave. One argument made, of course, in favor of the Afghan war is that if you have a safe haven, if you have a sanctuary for terrorists, then Al-Qaeda will use it. Well, the problem with that is, as an op-ed in the Washington Post has pointed out this week, you've already got that, right? Somalia would be a great safe haven. No need to look any further. You're not going to occupy Somalia, are you, boys? And, of course, according to the mythology of these characters, bin Laden is not in Afghanistan, but he's in Waziristan. He's in the federally administered tribal areas of Pakistan, and therefore he's already out of that country. Remember, the goal of the U.S. presence in Afghanistan is to push Taliban fighters into Pakistan so that they can fight a civil war and overthrow the Pakistan central government, the goal being split Pakistan into five parts. That is the goal. It is an anti-Chinese policy to prevent Pakistan from becoming ever a pro-Chinese energy corridor for oil from Iran and perhaps even further in the Middle East, but from Iran principally across a pipeline up over the Himalayas and into China. That would be strategic. That would also be good business. That would be peaceful trade. Who could feel threatened by that? London and New York and Washington. That's who. Inside the U.S., you've already got Senator Feingold wants a timetable to get out. Senator Levin of the Senate Armed Services Committee, also very skeptical about Afghanistan. There's no operational edge to this. Senator Feinstein, the same thing. She is unhappy. A lot of grumbling among the Out of Iraq caucus in the House of Representatives. Why not found an Out of Afghanistan caucus against Obama, dear Democrats in the House? We'll be back in a minute.